The GP Plus Careers Podcast.
Are you a GP hoping to diversify your career? Perhaps you've got a passion for women's health or have ambitions to be an expedition GP. Or maybe you've just always wondered, what would it be like to be a GP working in a prison? Well, this will hopefully be the podcast for you. My name's Sophie Lumley. I'm a First 5 GP in the West Midlands and also a training programme director. I certainly fell into the above category, and I was keen to start this podcast to find out about the breadth of career options available to me, my colleagues and my trainees. I've been lucky enough to interview fellow GPs who've had some of these extra roles. They've told me what their role involves, how they got there, and the tips and advice that they have for those hoping to follow in their footsteps. I really hope you enjoy listening and feel as inspired as I have in speaking to them. I'm really pleased today to be joined by Rachel Steen, who is a GP with an interest in health inequalities. So over to you, Rachel. Can you tell us a little bit about what you do?
So hi, I'm Rachel. I'm a GP in Sheffield, and I also run the National Trailblazer Scheme, which is a post-CCT fellowship for GPs working in areas of deprivation. So it's funded personal and professional development time for GPs working in areas of deprivation across the UK. So yeah.
So that sounds really important to talk a bit more about. So can you tell us a bit about what the scheme involves and what people on those fellowships do?
The Trailblazer Scheme is a scheme that started back in 2018 and started in Yorkshire and Humber. A small number, 7 GPs working in Yorkshire and Humber, who we use some kind of post-CCT fellowship money to kind of think about ways in which we can support GPs working specifically in areas of deprivation. And that gave those GPs time to kind of step away from their job in general practice for professional development, but also sort of time away from their GP role. As part of that, they were kind of getting focus education, so inclusion health, focus education, things about kind of trauma-informed care, homeless health, drug and alcohol services, that sort of thing, but also time to work on a project within their local community, and also have time for peer support. So there's that support element you get within your training scheme that kind of ends as soon as you finish and you CCT, and it's kind of an encouraging groups of GPs to kind of continue to develop that peer support, because we know that's really, really valuable. That as time went on, kind of at a similar time, kind of COVID hit, and we had to move a lot of the program online. But also at that time, we were getting a lot of interest from other areas of the country, hearing about what we were doing and interested in doing something similar. So now we've got other areas of the country, not just Yorkshire and Humber, running similar programs. And we've got a sort of national once a month education program where GPs come together and for that focus bit of their learning, and then they continue with their peer support and project work more locally. So it's a massive privilege, really, to get that one day a week where I'm working with, it's a really self-selecting bunch of GPs, really, who are really interested in inclusion health and have chosen to work in an area of deprivation. And they're just so dedicated and enthusiastic about working in the places that they do, and coming together to do to learn, but also share some of their experiences and share the work they're doing on their projects. It's a really nice sort of supplement to my working week as a GP.
Amazing. It certainly sounds like something that lots of people would be interested in. So I'm really pleased you've talked a bit more about that Trailblazer scheme, so others can go and look into it if they're working in an area of deprivation or might want to, or are working in your area. You mentioned a term there, inclusion health. I'm not sure that's something necessarily everyone would know what that meant. Could you tell us what that term relates to?
Yeah, of course. So there's a whole number of terms that I guess are used to describe maybe those patients who may not get the best care. So I tend to use the term really just to try and encompass all those patients who may have kind of an increased need. So that may be simply based on socioeconomic deprivation, that may be based on a language barrier, that may be based on someone who might identify themselves as homeless, that it could encompass all sorts of those patients who may not be getting the best care and who we may need to kind of think about how we can include them better in terms of access and also the care we're giving for them.
Perfect.
That's
That
how I'm.
that makes perfect sense. Just to sort of just for those who sort of thought, oh, I just want to clarify what that meant. You
Yeah.
mentioned that you've got a few other roles and you have a day a week to do the trailblazer sort of organisation of the fellowship. How does your week work? What other things are you up to?
So I'm a salary GP, so three fixed sessions a week where I'm doing GP work. Sometimes I pick up an extra session here or there. I guess the other big thing part of my week is I'm a mum of two kids, so looking after kids some of the week, so there's that juggle there. I also do the odd bit of teaching, so whether that's kind of the sort of ad hoc teaching, sort of health equity teaching for GP trainees, other GPs, allied health professionals, or within secondary care, I have done some teaching. And then I've also do some sort of medical leadership teaching separately, and that's also on an ad hoc basis. So I have an interest in kind of in leadership and also health equity and how those two kind of interact both kind of professionally, but also kind of personally in terms of kind of personal development. So yeah, so do little things from that point of view. I also sit on the health equity special interest group at the college. So that's a really unique kind of insight into kind of how the college works, but also what's happening from a college level, from a health equity point of view. It's also kind of connecting with colleagues across the country who also have an interest in tackling health inequities. So hearing about some of the work they're doing. I'm trying to think whether there's anything else, but I'm not sure there is.
How did you get into it then? Can you tell us a little bit about your career journey, to where you are now?
Yeah, of course. So I started doing a leadership fellowship during my GP training. I did have a kind of an interest in health equity and kind of population health during my undergraduate training. And I guess during my kind of foundation training, that you kind of were concentrating on kind of your foundation training. So I wasn't doing a huge amount at that point. But during my GP training, there was an amazing opportunity. So I'm in Sheffield, so in Yorkshire and Humber, there was a programme called the Future Leaders Programme, which came at a really good time for me, really. It was a time in GP training where I was kind of working full time as a GP trainee, finding it quite hard and kind of thinking about kind of the bigger picture of kind of general practice and where that sits. And it was an opportunity to really step away and sort of learn about kind of the structure of general practice and think about kind of the clinical work, but also kind of the bigger picture at the same time. And it's not actually unlike the trailblazer opportunity, really, for post-CCT fellows, because I got the gift of time, but also a supervisor who really believed in me and trusted me. And that gave me the opportunity to kind of step away and think about my own sort of personal and professional development. And that's when I got involved with the trailblazer scheme and kind of have. And when we were first starting out with the Trailblazer scheme in 2018, it's kind of taken that from there. And yeah, it really was a really great opportunity. So I guess the leadership fellowship was a big one for me. As part of that, I also had some professional coaching, which was encouraged as part of that leadership fellowship, and that was really amazing for me because it was a really great opportunity for me to be given some time to think, develop my own thinking, kind of challenge some of those negative limiting assumptions that maybe I was having about myself. So I can't do this, I'm not a leader, I wouldn't be very good at that, you know, that sort of thing that a lot of people I think do tell themselves on a day-to-day basis and potentially does hold people back. And it meant that some of those things that I was stopping myself doing, I just did. So I started sending those emails. And I don't think these are things that as medics we're particularly trained or given opportunities to do early on in our career, really, is kind of even just writing simple emails. And it's amazing how if you're not doing something regularly, how difficult that can actually be. So if you're not regularly sending emails, or if you're not regularly, I know, speaking up in meetings or sharing, then it feels really, really hard. So actually getting some experience to doing some of these things has been really, really great for me. The other thing coaching did was it gave me an opportunity to explore my own personal values, which was something that I hadn't ever really thought about before. So knowing some of my own personal values, so I know, for example, fairness, integrity, kindness, inclusivity, these sort of things are really, really important to me. So I can kind of use them as kind of almost like a guiding star for me in terms of making decisions. And when something kind of, when conflict arises or when something doesn't feel quite right, I can think, well, how does this align to my values? And I've frequently gone back to these over the last few years to think about stuff, both personally and professionally. So that's been really powerful. And then the other thing is thinking about kind of peer support networks and kind of thinking about how important that is. As part of my leadership fellowship, and then also around that time during training, I got involved with Next Generation GP, which is a kind of leadership program for early career GPs. And that was an opportunity for me to form peer support networks locally, but also nationally, get to know some really, really incredible, inspiring GP trainees and early career GPs who are doing amazing things across the country. And that's just been a really inspiring kind of place to be. And yeah, I recommend anyone listening to this, if you're not aware, if you're like a local Next Generation GP program, try and find it or start one up. So yeah, they're just a few things that kind of on my career have really, really really, really helped. So yeah, and I hope that's helpful for other people listening.
Definitely. And some really salient points there about, you know, the value of sort of coaching at various stages in your career, and the value of having that headspace to develop an interest, be it health or inclusion, health or others. And, you know, like you say, getting involved in national networks like Next Generation GP, hearing about things like the Trailblazer Fellowship, all of these things, you know, we're stronger and learn more certainly as a wider network of GPs to change these sorts of things and get involved in it as part of your career planning. Just thinking about inclusion health as a sort of special area of interest, for those interested in that or lots of what you're saying is resonating, do you feel that there's any sort of specific requirements or courses or anything that you think would be really helpful or necessary to get involved in inclusion health?
You can think about health equity in everything that we do in general practice. So whether it's something specifically around women's health or cardiovascular health or something that's kind of, I don't know, more social, that it's all relevant. Like, it's all relevant. So I don't think there is necessarily anything specific. Like, by all means, depending on where you want to take with it, you can go off and do specific training. So there are kind of academic training routes you can take. There are you can think about kind of public health or population health accreditations. There's stuff you can do through the think tanks, so through the King's Fund or the Health Foundation. There's also or the Nuffield Trust. There are loads of things you can do, and I guess it's really working out. And I know this answer seems really generic, and it's not necessarily giving a really specific place, but I think that's the whole point, really, is working out exactly what your interest is, and kind of exploring that is what I'd recommend, rather than thinking, right, I need to have a tick box list of accreditation behind me, because actually that might not necessarily carve your interest, and actually might. So I think actually it's really important to kind of think about, actually, what am I interested in? And actually when you explore that, you're more likely to kind of have those kind of passionate conversations and end up doing something that you actually really enjoy. Does that make sense, Sophie?
Yeah, definitely. It's following, a sort of being open-minded and not necessarily starting thinking out that you need a course or an accreditation. It's thinking about following your interests and developing that, finding relevant experiences and seeing where it takes you, which is certainly a common theme with lots of these podcasts, is that people say, well, you know, I didn't start out with a master's in this. I started out with a level of interest, and it's sort of things built from there. And it's like you say, sort of getting used to approaching people with emails and getting in the habit of putting yourself out there and joining these networks, which is really key to developing interest, whatever your interest may be. And what would you say for you are the main benefits of having a sort of special interest in inclusion health and your work as part of the Trailblazer scheme?
I guess the main benefit for me is how it kind of enhances my kind of role as a GP, really. I guess, like, first and foremost, there's, for me, I feel like it's changed my career dramatically in terms of how I feel like I'm impacting patients. I would hope that because of my experience and because of what I'm doing on a weekly basis, my knowledge and skills are better. I hope I'd be giving a high, I'm like, I'm hope I'm giving a sort of better quality of care, care that's more kind of preventative, trauma informed. I know I prescribe much less, because of the work I've been doing around health equity. I'm much more aware of community services and constantly thinking about how I can kind of increase my knowledge around what's available. But also, kind of seeing my patients within the wider context of the kind of health and social care system, and where they live, and all the issues that face them, and like their kind of social determinants of health. So how all of that kind of feeds into their health, and seeing my patients within that wider context. And then I guess there's kind of an impact on. Personally, I think I'm more confident and, dare I say it, happier to GP as a result of it. I think I'm, I do come into my GP work with kind of a fresh energy and kind of more curiosity because of the work I do. I think when you're kind of doing just one thing, maybe the same thing day to day, you can kind of lose that curiosity. And I think it's really important to kind of to keep that. I don't know whether you've ever done a thing, Sophie, where you've kind of been doing something day to day and you kind of lose that. And I think you can feel it deep within yourself, actually. And it doesn't feel good. And actually finding ways in which you can kind of reignite that fresh energy, because we've all come into general practice because we care. I don't, this stuff isn't easy. This really isn't easy. And confined to the 10-minute appointment of a busy GP day, it can be really, really hard. And I know when I was working full time as a reg, I think I was finding that really hard. So I think there's kind of less risk of burnout. For me, I think I've developed loads of peer support networks, which really gives me energy, and also a sense of belonging, both kind of locally within my GP practice in Sheffield, but also in the bigger picture of general practice and that kind of wider community.
Do you find, or have you heard from others, just sort of thinking about any downsides you think that there might be, or people might perceive there to be, with working in inclusion health, or working with people who are subject to sort of health inequalities?
It is more challenging, I think, but I think isn't that why we do it? There is increased need in areas of deprivation and less funding. So it does mean that more stretched, I think, as a GP, and that is really, really hard. It does make it a really, really hard job. And I don't think, I don't want to shy away from saying that and say that it's, I guess it's all rosy, because it's not. It's a really, really hard job. But I think that's not to say it can't, just because it's hard, it can't be really rewarding and enjoyable. I certainly feel that way. But I guess there are days when it does feel really hard, and general practice does feel hard. But I guess because I'm hopefully setting up some of those things within my career to kind of mitigate that a little bit, and mean that I can come back into work and hopefully enjoy the work, but also bring my best self to the patients that I'm seeing. But that no means doing that perfectly. we can all but try. So
I don't think there's any such thing as the perfect GP or the perfect career, but it sounds like you've got a really nice balance, and you've got really good insight into sort of the benefits and downsides for you, and like you say, sort of mitigating against the stress and challenges that come with working with difficult, in inverted commas, populations, and working to make that balance in your week. So for those who are sat there listening thinking, you know what, actually health inequalities has always appealed to me, you know, populations that, you know, are, you know, have excess need compared to excess and provision, you know, that's where I see myself going in the next 10, 15 years. What advice would you give to those people about where to start, what to do next, and how to sort of pursue that?
Locally, if you can get involved in any projects that are happening within your practice, you can make anything you're doing within your practice health equity focus. So just thinking about kind of how that particular intervention is targeting the people in your practice population who are most in need, you can tailor anything towards that question. But I guess it's finding that time. I think that's the thing that's really challenging within primary care is finding that time and kind of, and it's tricky. You can do stuff voluntarily, and if you can, and it's a massive bonus if you can find some funded time to do that. So seeking out some fellowships, contact your training program directors, your training hub, depending on where you are in your career. There's kind of university academic units of primary care. Find out what's happening within your PCN. There's loads and loads of different places that there's little funding pots that you can kind of hopefully draw on that you might be able to kind of carve out some time to be able to do something interesting. So reach out. I've been having some mentoring recently, and my mentor challenged me to contact five people who I had. Who kind of would who are inspiring me and interesting me, and wow, those conversations where they've taken me in terms of the conversations I've had. Because I think just continually like encouraging yourself, I think, to have that communication and connection with other people can really open doors. And it's very easy to kind of keep your head down, do the job, and go home again. But actually, kind of having those conversations. Setting up, asking what other people are doing, contacting. It's incredible how many people are just really happy just to have a 15-minute, half an hour chat and tell you about what they're doing and give you a few tips. I've definitely benefited from that. And I think most people are really, really happy to do that. So, send some emails and see who you can have some interesting conversations with. But also, really, really, kind of seriously thinking about doing some coaching. The other thing is a mentor. So, if there's anyone who specifically really inspires you or you think is doing some amazing work, again, that kind of reaching out and connecting then can kind of potentially lead to a kind of almost like a mentoring role. So someone who may be able to kind of help you and mentor you and be able to give you some kind of more long-term support as you develop your thinking around things. So that could also be an option.
Just sorry, I'm going slightly off piece, but I'm really interested by that idea of sending five, approaching five people who inspire you. Just for those sat there thinking, oh, well, I can think of five people who inspire me, but I wouldn't know what to say or what to ask or what to project about myself in those emails. Can you just give us a flavour of with those five people that you approached and those interesting conversations that have come from it, what the ask was or what was the sort of basis of the start of the conversation?
So this is something that doesn't come naturally to me at all. Okay. So, and it actually feels quite uncomfortable because you're basically saying, hi, can I have a chat with you about me, about how, what I could do next, basically. And it doesn't come comfortably, but it just, I think my mentor encouraging me to do this, I guess in many ways gave me permission in a sense that I wouldn't have necessarily given myself permission to do that. So that's the first thing. And we all suffer from imposter syndrome. And I think, it makes it really hard to kind of think you're thinking, oh, well, why? Oh, I'm going to be bothering this really busy person. Actually, I think people do find it really interesting to talk about what they're up to and kind of share and kind of bring people with them on the journey they're going on. And most people are really, really open to that. In terms of what I said, I think it was a really simple email, just kind of saying, hi, this is who I am. Or it was someone I knew already, and said, hi, how are you doing? How's this bit of work going, this, that, and the other? And it'd be great to kind of have a half an hour chat at some point if you can spare the time. It'd be interesting to hear your thoughts around any opportunities that might be coming up or whatever. And actually, and you can make that more specific to what your ask is, and what it is you're wanting to explore. But sometimes even just having that conversation, it's like, look, I'm really interested in what you do. Can you tell me about what your role is and how you got into that role? A little bit like what you're doing as part of this podcast, Sophie, is essentially having that conversation. And it's amazing kind of how those conversations can get you thinking, also get you talking to someone else, or get you researching thing, or becoming aware of opportunities that you had no idea existed. So that's something that I found really helpful, actually, because it not only gave me the permission to do it, but it also kind of got me thinking and gave me some ideas.
Amazing. That's really helpful. I think it is just helpful to give people a sense of, how to approach these sort of things. But I think, like you say, it's asking for a conversation and then seeing where it takes you. Just sort of focusing on health, inclusion, health, and sort of networks. You mentioned a couple previously, related to things you've been involved in the past, but just for those sitting thinking, right, okay, where are the next steps? I've thought about my local, you know, projects and in practice and maybe regional ones, but are there any national or regional networks or things, places people should look to network with others with similar interests?
Yeah, so there's DPEN General Practice, which are sort of groups of GPs working in areas of deprivation across the UK. Your area might have that. There's a lot of educational resources on the Fair Health website, so do check that out if you're that's something that you're kind of interested in developing. There's lots of kind of introductions to health equity, so there's networks as part of that. There's a whole include sort of health inequalities platform and forum on the RCGP website. So do check that out as well. There is some of the national stuff, but I think there's also kind of thinking about what's happening locally. So sort of find out what's happening locally as part of your primary care network or your ICB, or there's usually some stuff happening specifically around health equity. So finding out who's got those roles and opening up some conversations with them and see what's happening. Because actually that's where you can kind of potentially start getting involved with some stuff more locally. And that's what a load of our trailblazers have done. And that's like really inspiring to see some of the work that they've been doing locally in their local areas around kind of different specific projects. Yeah, there's loads and loads of opportunity out there.
Awesome. And what a lovely note to end on about, yeah, just being opportunistic and about starting locally and you know, following your interests. I certainly feel inspired, Rachel, but I'd asking people to just leave with a really nice positive note for you to share your best moment or highlight of your work in inclusion health.
So I came back from mat leave last year and I came back to sort of clinical work. And obviously after a bit of time off, it sometimes feels quite hard because you're like, oh gosh, what have I forgotten? And we actually had our national Trailblazer conference in September in Birmingham. And I was sort of definitely feeling a bit rusty and juggling sort of day-to-day work within general practice. And I went along and the energy and enthusiasm from the other GPs was just incredible. That shared feeling of kind of rising to the challenge of, as I said earlier, working in what can feel really, really hard circumstances, but doing that hard thing, but also doing it together. And that sort of shared feeling of that we can do it. As I mentioned before, some of the incredible projects that some of the GPs share as part of the programme are just so inspiring. I'll just try and think of a few. So we've got a GP from a few years ago. He set up a drop-in clinic at his local family hub in Hull, and within a socioeconomically deprived part of Hull, to provide kind of care for families as a whole, really, as a drop-in service. And that's something that he's gone on to sort of get ongoing funding for. We've had GPs do projects within practice to improve their access for learning to disability and autism. We've got kind of social prescribing mapping within Peterborough. We've got diabetic specialist clinics set up in Sheffield. There's all sorts of stuff that some of the Trailblazer GPs have done that kind of just inspire me so much, and just to think about how motivated they are and how much energy they're bringing and what impact they're making. And I think for me, that is seeing some of that stuff is such a privilege and such a kind of highlight to my work, because I just see these amazing GPs doing such incredible things, but also by doing those things, I'm seeing those GPs feel more motivated, have more sense of belonging, and feel more connected to their local communities, and in turn, sort of healthier, happier GPs. And I guess what could be more motivating and more kind of inspiring than that, really? I feel, as I said at the beginning, it's such a privilege.
Amazing. Thank you so much for joining me today, Rachel. I think that's been very inspiring for me, but I'm sure others. Your enthusiasm for this area is palpable. And thank you for all of those sort of tips and links that you've shared. We'll certainly share those at the bottom of the podcast, and I'm sure others will start looking into them. So thank you very much for giving up your time.
No problem at all. It's an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much, Sophie.
We hope that this careers podcast has motivated and inspired you to explore the variety of career options available as a GP. Speak to your appraiser, your local training programme directors, or perhaps join our RCGP mentoring programme for further support to diversify your career. Thanks for listening and good luck.
The GP Plus Careers Podcast.